she recognized her recently discarded brooch, and nothing more. "Our master sees potential in you still," Sylora explained. "He bade me take you under my wing as my servant."
"Never!"
Sylora held up a finger. "You have a chance to get through this alive, Dahlia, and again serve in the ranks of the Lich Lord. Perhaps you might even redeem yourself in his eyes, perhaps even in mine. And it's that or die. Would you forfeit your life so easily?" Dahlia mulled on the offer for a few heartbeats. She knew Sylora would make her life miserable, of course, but at least she might have a chance.
"Come," Sylora bade her, "reconsider. There is heated battle joined in the south, with the Netherese, no less. You would enjoy killing Shadowvar, would you not?"
Dahlia felt the defiance draining out of her so completely, she wondered if Sylora had enacted an enchantment upon her. The worry was fleeting, though, for she knew the source of her melting resolve. Was there anything in the world Dahlia hated more than the Netherese? She looked at Sylora, hardly trusting the Thane.
"My dear, if I wanted you dead, you would be dead already," Sylora replied to that suspicious expression. "I could have filled this alley with killing magic or with murderous Ashmedai." She held out her hand. "Our road is to the south to battle the Netherese. I will count you among my lieutenants, and as long as you fight well, I will trouble you little."
"I am to trust Sylora Salm?"
"Hardly. But I serve Zastam, and he holds hope for you. When the beast comes forth, I claim the credit for the catastrophe, as it is mine to take. Your role will be seen as minor, an agent gathering information, and in the critical moment failing. But you're young still, and will redeem yourself with every Netherese beast you slay."
Dahlia stopped her end poles from spinning, clicked the staff back whole, and broke it into a 4-foot walking stick once more. She bent and picked up the brooch, holding it in front of her eyes for just a few moments before fastening it once more to her blouse. On the other side of the wooden fence, Barabbas the Grey listened to every word. Of particular concern, despite the obvious gravity of the conversation, was the reference to a drow and a dwarf, connected somehow to this elf warrior, Dahlia. He had learned little in his short time in Luskan. Though he'd traveled to the Undercity and had seen and spoken with the phylactery that held the spirit of Arklem Greith, he couldn't yet put all the pieces together, but he felt he had enough to satisfy that wretch Allegni. He was on the road soon after, riding hard to the south on a summoned nightmare that didn't tire, and watching, every stride, the line of smoke rising into the clear, late summer sky far to the southeast. Parallel to Barabbas, but many miles away, Drizzt Do'Urden, too, rode a magical mount and watched that same plume. He had left Brunner at their latest camp, a small village where they had bartered work for food and shelter, the first afternoon of the smoke's appearance. Andahar's great strides carried him swiftly, the unicorn charging across the woodland, hilly terrain with ease. Drizzt let the bells of the barding sing for the run, welcoming the diversion of the song. It had been a difficult and frustrating summer for the drow and his dwarf friend. The continuing disappointments of one dead end after another had started to wear on Brunner. Drizzt recognized that the former king missed his rugged, rough friend Puent, though of course Brunner would never admit any such thing. There was a restlessness growing in Drizzt, too, but he did well to keep it from Brunner. How many years could he spend hunting in holes for some sign of an ancient dwarven kingdom? He loved Brunner as much as any friend he had ever known, but it had been just the two of them for a long time. Their parting a couple of days before had been of mutual agreement. The drow rode Andahar hard, and when he at last found a trade road, Drizzt didn't stay to the side of it, as prudence always demanded in those times of banditry in the wild crags. He didn't think of it openly, didn't admit it to himself, But Drizzt Do'Urden would have liked nothing more at that time than to be confronted by highwaymen, and hopefully a sizable band. Too long had his blades sat in their scabbards. Too long had Talmaril the Heartseeker sat quiet across his back. He rode for the smoke, hoping that it signaled something amiss, some battle waiting to be joined or already joined. As long as there remained enemies worth fighting. He continued on a southerly route, not going straight for the plume. He knew the ground fairly well, and noted that the smoke was coming from Mount Hottenuf, one of the few hills in the crags tall enough to rightfully be called a mountain. It had two peaks, the lower one to the north, the taller south-southeast of that, and both of bald stone, the result of some long-ago fire that had burned the trees away and had allowed erosion to wash away most of the soil. The best approach to the two-peaked mountain was from the southeast, Drizzt knew, where he could get a good look at the area before riding in. As he passed by the mountain, he veered even farther away, riding to the southeast, and another tall hill from which he could gain a better vantage point. It seemed as if the smoke poured out of the top of the lower, northern peak. Drizzt dismissed Andahar at the base of a steep, forested hill. Bow in hand, he scaled the mountainside, moving from tree to tree so he could brace himself before attempting to move any higher. At last he gained the top. Drizzt thought to climb a tree, but saw a better option in a rocky outcrop on the mound's western side, directly facing the distant twin-peaked mountain. He came out into the open and cupped a hand over his eyes to gain a better view of the distant, smoking peak. He could see no armies moving about, and no dragons in the blue sky. A bonfire from a barbarian encampment, perhaps? A giant's forge? None of it made sense to Drizzt. To sustain a fire of such magnitude for so long, the smoke plume had been visible for several days, would have taken a forest of lumber. Brunner had, of course, claimed that it must be a dwarven forge, a dwarven fire, an ancient dwarven kingdom. But he always made that claim at any sign. Drizzt continued to stare into the distance for a long while, following the line as close to the mountain stones as he could make out. He noted, too, when a breeze temporarily cleared the opaque veil, some redness there streaking the stones. Then the world blew up. Standing on the Haersgoalegni Bridge in Neverwinter, Barabbas the Grey and Haersgoalegni also noted the smoke plume, so clear in the sky from their nearer vantage point. A forest fire? Barabbas guessed. I never got too near to it, and the folk in Port Last had no more insight into it than anyone here in Neverwinter, apparently.
You didn't think it prudent to go and investigate, Allegni scolded.
I thought my information regarding the Feans and this catastrophe they're planning was more urgent.
And you haven't thought that these events might be connected? Is there, perhaps, a red dragon just northeast of here, waiting to fly to this Silora creature's call?
As he spoke, the Netherese commander walked to the bridge's edge closest the distant spectacle, and locked his hands on the rail, peering to the north.
And if I went there and couldn't return to you in time, you would be even less prepared, Barabbas argued.
Allegni didn't look back at him.
I grant you that, the tiefling said after a short pause. Go there now and learn what you may.
He glanced over his shoulder to see Barabbas scowling.
It's not so far.
Difficult terrain, far from the road.
You speak as if I...
Allegni started to say, but he stopped when Barabbas's eyes went wide with shock. Haersgoalegni spun back toward the plume, toward the low mountain. The low mountain that had leaped into the sky, it seemed, solid rock transforming into something more malleable, like a cloud of impossibly thick ash. The Ashmedai in Neverwinter Wood fell to their knees in prayer and joy, overwhelmed at the sight of what they knew would be the beginning of a grand dread ring.
Oh, but the gods are with us! Silora cried as the mountain flew high, and she noted the angle of the blast. If I had aimed it myself!
The fall of the mountain seemed perfectly aimed at the city of Neverwinter, and indeed it was. Mount Hottenough had not simply erupted. The angry primordials sought carnage as hungrily as did Zastam. Sylora dropped her arm across Dahlia's shoulders and shook the elf with familiarity.
"We must take cover quickly," Sylora instructed her charges, and they were not unprepared. "The beast, our beast, has roared."
All around Dahlia, Ashmedai rushed to and fro, gathering their belongings and running for the cave they had chosen as their shelter. Dorcray and Valindra were already in there, shielded from the stinging daylight. Dahlia didn't move. She couldn't move, frozen in awe, in horror, at the spectacle of the freed primordial, of the exploding volcano. What had she done? Drizzt watched the lower peak of the mountain as it seemed to simply come apart and leap skyward. He thought of a long-ago day on a beach outside of Waterdeep, a hot summer day. He and Catti Bree had been serving with Dudermont aboard Sea Sprite and had put into port for supplies and respite. The couple had wandered down to the shore to spend a quiet afternoon. He thought of that peaceful time in that most terrifying of moments, for he had played a game that day, burying Catti Bree's legs under the wet beach sand. Watching the mountain break apart reminded him of when Catti Bree had lifted her sand-covered legs. The stones in the distance seemed to come apart like beach sand, but revealing lines of angry red lava instead of the smooth flesh of Catti Bree's calf. Strangely silent for many heartbeats, the lifting mountain expanded and stretched, twisting and blending with the heavy cloud into a weird shape like the neck and head of a bird. Only then did Drizzt realize that the silence was only because the shockwave, the devastating wall of sound, hadn't yet reached him. He saw trees in the far distance falling over toward him, falling over away from the mountain. Then the ground beneath his feet lurched and rolled, and the sound of 100 roaring dragons had him falling aside and covering his ears. He caught one last glimpse of the volcano as the mountain stone tumbled down, a wall of stone and ash many times taller than the tallest tree, running madly for the ocean, burying and burning everything in its path.
"By the gods," Herzgo Allegni whispered.
The mountain leaped, tumbled, and had begun to roll at tremendous speed, devouring everything in its path. And its path led directly for Neverwinter.
"The end of the world," Barabbas the Grey whispered. And those words from that man, so out of place, so hyperbolic, and yet so inadequate, spoke volumes to them both.
"I go,"
Allegni announced just moments later. He looked at Barabbas and shrugged.
"Farewell."
And Herzgo Allegni stepped into the shadow fringe, leaving Barabbas alone on the bridge. Alone, but not for long, for the folk of Neverwinter saw their doom then and took to the streets, running and screaming, crying and calling for loved ones. Barabbas watched people rush into buildings, but one look at the coming avalanche of fiery rock, and it was clear the wattle and daub buildings of Neverwinter would provide no shelter. Where could he run? How could he possibly escape? The assassin looked to the water, naturally, and thought for just a moment of leaping into the river to swim for the sea. But when he glanced back the other way, he saw that the mountain was almost upon him, and there in the river lay certain doom. Huge, fiery stones began raining down around him, splashing into the river, shattering houses. What could survive? Barabbas the Grey went over the side of the bridge, but didn't jump or fall. He climbed right under it and tucked himself into the iron substructure. Around him, the screams of the Neverwinter increased in pitch and magnitude, until the roar of 100 dragons drowned them out. Then came the crunching explosions of more buildings being shattered, the splash of water, and the hiss of protest as the hot flow swept over the river. Barabbas shielded himself as much as he could, not even daring to look as the flow rushed beneath him, nearly reaching him. He felt the intense heat, as if he was sitting with his face inches from the hot fires of a blacksmith's oven. The bridge shook, and he thought it would surely crumble to pieces and drop him to his death. On and on it went, the thunder and fire, the falling fireballs, the ultimate devastation of an entire city. Then, as instantly as the first wave of sound had roared in his ears, there was silence. A dead, muted silence. Not a scream, not a groan, not a wail. A bit of wind, but nothing more. After a long while, an hour or more, Barabbas the Gray dared crawl out from under the Herzegov-Alegny Bridge. He had put his cloak over his face as a filter against the burning ash that permeated the air. Everything was gray and deep and dead. Neverwinter was dead. Part 2. The King's Minions. The fights are increasing, and it pleases me. The world around me has grown darker, more dangerous, and it pleases me. I have just passed a period of my life most adventurous and yet, strangely, most peaceful, where Brunner and I have climbed through 100 tunnels and traveled as deep into the Underdark as I have been since my last return to Menzo Berenzon. We found our battles, of course, mostly with the oversized vermin that inhabit such places. A few skirmishes with goblins and orcs, a trio of trolls here, a clan of ogres there. Never was there any sustained battle, though, never anything to truly test my blades, and indeed, the most perilous day I have known since our departure from Mithril Hall those many years ago was when an earthquake threatened to bury us in some tunnels. But no more is that the case, I find, and it pleases me. Since that day of cataclysm, a decade ago, when the volcano roared forth and painted a line of devastation from the mountain all the way to the sea, burying Neverwinter in its devastating run, the tone of the region has changed. It is almost as if that one event had sent forth a call for conflict, a clarion call for sinister beings. In a sense, it did just that. The loss of Neverwinter, in essence, severed the north from the more civilized regions along the Sword Coast, where Waterdeep has now become the vanguard against the wilderness. Traders no longer travel through the region except by sea, and the lure of Neverwinter's former treasures has pulled adventurers, often unsavory, often unprincipled, in great numbers to the devastated city. Some are trying to rebuild, desperate to restore the busy port and the order it once imposed upon these inhospitable lands. But they battle as much as they build. They carry a carpenter's hammer in one hand, a warhammer in the other. Enemies abound. Shadowvar, those strange cultists sworn to a devil god. Opportunistic highwaymen, goblinkin, giants, and monsters alive and undead, and other things, darker things from deeper holes. In the years since the cataclysm, the northern Sword Coast has grown darker by far. And it pleases me. When I am in battle, I am free. When my blades cut low a scion of evil, only then do I feel as if there is purpose to my life. Many times have I wondered if this rage within is just a reflection of a heritage I have never truly shaken. The focus of battle, the intensity of the fight, the satisfaction of victory. Are they all merely an admission that I am, after all, drow? And if that is the truth, then what did I actually know about my homeland and my people? And what did I merely paste onto a caricature I had created of a society whose roots lay in passion and lust I had not yet begun to understand or experience? Was there, I wonder, and I fear, some deeper wisdom to the matron mothers of Menzo Berenzon, some understanding of drow joy and need that perpetuated the state of conflict in the drow city. It seems a ridiculous thought. And yet only through battle have I endured the pain. Only through battle have I found again a sense of accomplishment, of forward movement, of bettering community. This truth surprises me, angers me, and paradoxically, even as it offers me hope to continue, it hints at some notion that perhaps I should not, that this existence is only a futile thing after all, a mirage, a self-delusion, like Brunner's quest. I doubt he'll find Gauntlegrim. I doubt it exists, and I doubt that he believes he'll find it either, or that he ever believed he would find it. And yet every day he pores over his collection of maps and clues and leaves no hole unexplored. It is his purpose. The search gives meaning to the life of Brunner Battlehammer. Indeed, it seems the nature of the dwarf, and of the dwarves in general, who are always talking of things gone by and reclaiming the glory that once was. What is the nature of the drow, then? Even before I lost her, my love Catti Bree, and my dear halfling friend, I knew that I was no creature of calm and respite. I knew my nature was that of the warrior. I knew I was happiest when adventure and battle summoned me forth, demanding of those skills I had spent my entire life perfecting. I relish it more now. Is that because of my pain and loss? Or is it merely a truer reflection of my heritage? And if that is the case, will the cause of battle widen? Will the code that guides my scimitars weaken to accommodate more moments of joy? At what point, I wonder, and I fear, does my desire for battle, that which is in my heart, interfere with that which is in my conscience? Is it easier now to justify drawing my blades? That is my true fear, that this rage within me will come forth in all its madness, explosively, randomly, murderously. My fear? Or my hope? Drizzt Do'Urden. Chapter 10. Battling the Darkness. The Year of the Elves Weeping. 1462 D.R.
"Here they come! Oh, be brave, boys, and hold the teams!" the caravan boss cried out to the men and women crouched in and around the wagons, weapons in hand. Off to the side of the road, the thicket shook with the approaching storm of enemies. "Scrabblers!" one man said, his nickname for the agile and swift undead humanoids that had infested the region.
"Dustwalkers,"
corrected another, and that name seemed equally fitting, for those marauders, undead monsters, left rails of gray powder in their wake, as if every step they took was their first out of the ashes of a burned-out hearth. And indeed, the rumors said that the monsters were the animated corpses of those who had been buried beneath the volcanic ash a decade before.
"Guard!"
the boss called out after a few more tense moments passed, without any clear sight of the enemy.
"Go and scout the tree line!"
The hired guard, a stocky old dwarf with a beard of silver and orange, a shield emblazoned with the crest of a foaming mug, a many-notched axe and a one-horned helmet, turned a wary eye on the leader. The man swallowed hard under that withering gaze, but to his credit, managed to summon enough courage to once again motion toward the trees.
"I tell ye when ye hired me," the dwarf warned. "Ye might be telling me what to fight, but ye ain't telling me how to fight."
"We cannot just sit here while they plot."
"Plot?"
the dwarf echoed with a belly laugh.
"They're done dead, ye dolt. They ain't plotting."
"Then where are they?"
another man cried, who seemed on the verge of desperation.
"Maybe they aren't out there. Maybe it's just the wind,"
said a woman from a wagon near the back.
"Ye all ready for a fight?"
the dwarf asked.
"Ye got your weapons in hand?"
He looked at the boss, who stood tall, scanned the five wagons, and nodded. Brunner stood up, stuck his thumbs in his mouth, and blew a loud whistle. Everyone but the dwarf reflexively ducked then as a shot of lightning creased the air to the side of the caravan, emanating from somewhere behind and streaking horizontally across the way to disappear into the trees. A horrid shriek came back and a rustle of branches. A second bolt knifed into the trees. The branches began to rustle again.
"Here they come now," the dwarf said, loud enough for all to hear. "Ye fight well and die better."
Across the way, the scrabblers, the dustwalkers, the ash zombies, whatever name anyone wanted to put on the small, shriveled gray humanoids, came forth in a sudden rush, leaping from branches or running out of the tree line, some upright and swaying back and forth, as if they might tip over with every stride, others hunched and scrambling on all fours. And the other way, behind the crouching drivers and caravanners, came the sound of bells singing sweetly and the pounding of hooves. Another streaking arrow shot past from a magical bow, blinding and devastating as it exploded into the head of the nearest monster, blasting it apart in a puff of gray ash. The caravan's horses neighed as mighty Andahar approached, and one team reared when the magnificent unicorn cleared a wagon in one great leap, landing clean on the other side with Drizzt already readying another arrow. He shot dead a pair of zombies, the bolt blasting through one and into the other, and in one fluid motion he shouldered the bow, drew out his scimitars, and rolled off the side of a galloping mount. Andahar continued on, lowered his head, and plowed through the nearest monsters, impaling one on his spiral horn and blasting aside the other. Drizzt hit the ground in a controlled roll, turning right back up to his feet and charging along as smoothly as if he'd been running the whole time. He rushed between a pair of zombies, scimitars slashing out to either side, cutting them down. He skidded to a stop before a third, bringing his blades up in a circling maneuver over his head, back to front, the blades sliding past each other above and in front of him as he brought them forward. He drove his left arm out straight, blade horizontal and at eye level, to block the wild overhead swings of a charging zombie. And the creature showed no sign of pain at all as its forearms dived into a solid defensive block, as its ashen skin gashed on the fine edge of Twinkle. In the same movement Drizzt executed the block with Twinkle, he cocked his right elbow back behind him, and as he turned his leading blade off to the side, further skinning the zombie's arms, he stepped forward and thrust Icing Death hard into the monster's chest. The scimitar blasted through with such force that Drizzt noted a puff of ash behind the zombie. That hole seemed barely to affect the monster, but it was hardly a surprise to the seasoned drow ranger. Even as he retracted Icing Death, he brought Twinkle in with a downward slash, one that got tangled with the zombie's arms and kept it off balance and defenseless as Icing Death went down, under and around and back in from the other side, connecting solidly across the monster's neck and chopping it down. All of it, the block, the stab, the two slashes, happened so quickly that Drizzt hardly slowed his forward progress, and he simply ran up and over the zombie as it tumbled backward. He managed to glance back, to see his mighty steed lift its hind quarters in a double kick and explode a zombie into a cloud of ash. Most of the other monsters chased after Andahar, with only a few continuing for the caravan. Creatures turned in for Drizzt from left and right, moving with startling agility and speed for undead, and yet still not quickly enough to catch up to the blur that was Drizzt Do'Urden, his legs speeded by magical anklets, his balance always perfect, his strategy 3 steps ahead. He veered left, blasting right into a group of zombies, so many that the caravan crew and Brunner collectively gasped as he disappeared into a sea of gray ash. But so fast and perfect were his slashes, driving aside impediments, and so fast his stabs to the side, in front of him, even a backhand to defeat pursuit, that he didn't slow, and the collective gasp became a collective cheer when he reappeared out the other side, seemingly in the clear, but with a horde of zombies still in pursuit. And behind the zombies, Drizzt knew, came Brunner, cutting down the distracted undead as they chased the dark elf. But the drow had to skid to a stop, surprised, when out of the thicket to the side charged another enemy, another zombie. The newcomer was not one of the humans, elves, or dwarves, shriveled into the hot flow of the volcano, though, but a gigantic and formidable beast, one which in life would have challenged Drizzt, and in undeath feeling no pain, knowing no fear, and all but immune to minor wounds, was all the more formidable. It stood nearly twice Drizzt's height and outweighed him at least four times over, with giant pincers protruding from its face and long wiry arms ending in claws that could rend stone as easily as a man could dig in soft dirt. Drizzt had battled umber hulks before, as had so many of his kin, growing up in the Underdark. But in addition to the ashen gray look of those creatures killed by the hot volcanic flow, the hulk had about it a darker pall, a shadowy essence, as though it had stepped out of the depths of the Shadowfell. Drizzt managed to avert his eyes just in time to avoid the creature's magical gaze, known to debilitate the finest warriors. He didn't wait to look back before moving, guessing correctly that any delay would cost him dearly. He darted right at the monster, just within the sweeping reach of its powerful claws. The Shadow Hulk tried to stomp him as he skidded past, but Drizzt tucked into a roll and got out of the way in time, even managing to stab that stomping foot for good measure. He came up to his feet and darted straight behind the thing, keeping it turning, and landed several heavy slashes in the process. But felling the monster would be like chopping down a thick oak, and an oak that savagely fought back.
"Keep it moving, elf!" he heard Brunner yell from across the way, still back near the caravan wagons. "Indeed," the drow whispered in reply, having no intention of facing up squarely against that beast.
He got in one last slash and darted away, drawing forth an onyx figurine as soon as he put some space between himself and the Shadow Hulk.
"Come to me, Guinevar," Drizzt called softly.
He hadn't wanted to summon the panther, for she had fought beside him the night before and needed her rest in her astral home. He saw the gray mist appearing and ran beyond it, the Shadow Hulk in swift pursuit.
"Keep him moving, elf!" he heard Brunner cry from the side.
Drizzt glanced that way to watch the dwarf rush out to the side of the wagons toward a large boulder flanked by a few birch trees. With a knowing nod, Drizzt spun, surprising the Shadow Hulk just enough so that he could again rush inside the deadly sweep of its clawing hands. He snapped off several stabs and left with a heavy slash, or feigned leaving. Again he spun, just outside the creature's turn. He went past again with another flurry of stabs and slashes. He just started to run once more when he heard the growl, then the impact, as a leaping Guinevar slammed against the Shadow Hulk's back. Drizzt darted off to the side as the monster staggered under the weight of 600 pounds of muscled panther.
"The little ones, Gwen!" Drizzt yelled in alarm, seeing that many ash zombies still surrounded Andahar, and more moved to press the caravan crew.
With a puff of smoky ash, the panther leaped away, even as Drizzt again came in at the Shadow Hulk. The creature foolishly turned as if to follow Guinevar, allowing the ranger several heavy strikes. Then Drizzt was running again, the Shadow Hulk in close pursuit. He glanced in the direction of the caravan, nodding in satisfaction to see that Guinevar was already rounding up the zombies and shredding them with her powerful claws. Drizzt kept just ahead of the Shadow Hulk, dangerously close. He wanted the creature's focus on him alone as he ran in a loop, bringing it right in front of the boulder where Brunner had disappeared. He rushed out only a few strides from the stone, then spun back to squarely face the monster. A clawed hand swung down from on high, too powerfully for Drizzt to even dare attempt a block. He dodged aside, and the arm crashed down against the ground, the monster's three claws digging deep gashes in earth and stone alike. Drizzt stabbed and dodged, whirled to one side, then the other, striking where he could find an opening, but fighting defensively, just trying to keep the Shadow Hulk engaged and distracted. Out of the corner of his eye, he caught sight of Brunner again, running to the top of the boulder and beyond, descending from on high with a great leap, his many-notched axe up high over his head and held in both hands. The dwarf's whole body seemed to bend and snap forward, like the jaws of a giant wolf, his muscles only adding to his momentum as he drove the axe home. A weird grunt came forth from the Shadow Hulk, sounding far more surprised, even curious, than pained. The creature took a step toward Drizzt, its expression somewhat pensive, as if it were only then grasping the reality of its sudden end. Drizzt stared at that curious expression for many heartbeats, so many that he had to dive aside to avoid being buried by the falling monster. despite the many undead still left to be dealt with, Drizzt couldn't suppress a smile as he watched Brunner ride the Shadow Hulk the last couple of feet to the ground, his shield hand still gripping his axe, his free hand up behind him. It looked as though the dwarf was breaking a wild horse.
"Elf, I'm thinking of a yeti on the tundra,"
the dwarf said, tearing his axe free.
"Always seems as if you're needin' savin'."
"So, as you did with the yeti, will you try to cook this one's brains?" Drizzt asked, spinning away and heading for the nearest monster.
"Bah," the dwarf snorted. "Tastin' like dust, or I'm a bearded gnome."
For all the years and all the battles, for all the loss and all the strange roads, there was nothing Brunner might have said to better comfort Drizzt just then, and to better launch him into the next fight, and the one after that. With Andahar and Gwenivar, and some small assistance from the caravanners, the attack was beaten back in short order, leaving only minor wounds for a few of the merchants and guards, and no real damage to any of the wagons or horse teams. They were on their way in short order, with Drizzt riding flank. By dawn, the road had turned directly west, and they broke out of the woodland and onto an open plain. The sea flanked them on the left, and with so much open ground to their right, most of the crew settled in for some sleep. Drizzt dismissed his magical mount and climbed aboard the jockey seat of the last wagon, Brunner beside him. They would make Neverwinter by noon, so the boss informed him. And even though so many were weary, they wouldn't stop the caravan. "A fine, well-paying journey," Drizzt remarked to Brunner, speaking as much to keep himself alert as for any desire for conversation.
"Not that you're caring,"
a sleepy Brunner replied. Drizzt cocked an eyebrow the dwarf's way.
"Bah, but ye only did this for the fightin'," Brunner accused.
"We need the coin," Drizzt replied.
"Ye do it for free, anything to sing your blades."
"Our funds are not inexhaustible, my friend. You paid good gold for that last map you acquired."
"An investment, I tell ye. Think of the treasures Gontalgrim'll give us,"
Brunner insisted. "And that map will lead us there?"
"Not for knowing," Brunner admitted, "but one of them will."
"That map, scrawled by a Kalashite sailor, a pirate no less, will lead us to our destination, which 1,000,000 dwarves have not found in 1,000 years of searching?"
"Ah, shut your mouth,"
Drizzt grinned at him.
"Ye hide in your blades," Brunner said more seriously.
Drizzt didn't answer, just looked straight ahead at the road and the wagons in front of them.
"Ye always did, I know," the dwarf continued. "I seen it in Icewind Dale when first we met. I remember me boy shaking his head and calling ye crazy when ye took him into the lair of that giant Bigrin. But never like this, elf. I'm thinking that if ye had a choice of two roads, one safe and one thick with monsters, ye'd take the thick one."
"I didn't pick this road, you did," Drizzt replied.
"Nah, yourself signed us on as guards, ready for the fight."
"We need the coin, O great cave crawler."
"Bah,"
Brunner grumbled, shaking his head. They were indeed short of funds, but not destitute by any means, having taken a rather tidy sum along with them from Mithril Hall those many years ago. And really, other than Brunner's quest for maps and trinkets, they had little on which they needed to spend the coin. The dwarf let it go at that, and drifted off to sleep, where he found comfortable dreams of yesteryear, of Kelvin's cairn in Icewind Dale, and the high perch upon it known as Brunner's Climb, of running with the companions of the hall, him and the elf, and his boy and his girl, and the halfling he so often found fishing on the banks of Mare Dueldon. It had been a good life, Brunner decided, good and long, and full of fine friends and fine adventures. They came in sight of Neverwinter soon after, and no one spoke a word of protest when the boss stopped the lead wagon on a high ridge overlooking the place, so that all could take in the sight. Once it had been a sprawling city, a great port. Then, with the eruption of Mount Hottenough, it had been no more than a desolate,
barren ruin of black stone and deep gray ash. But the wounds in the land were healing, plants growing thick in the rich volcanic soil. And while many of the ruins of old Neverwinter were still visible, new structures had been built. Few in number, none approaching the grandeur of old Neverwinter as of yet. The small settlement seemed truly discordant. The most impressive structure to be seen by far was the old winged Wyvern Bridge, which had briefly been called something else no one remembered. It had escaped the devastation nearly unscathed, with only one abutment taking any noticeable damage, and it had come to serve as the centerpiece, the promise, of what Neverwinter might become anew. So entranced were Brunner and Drizzt at the sight of the distant town, neither noticed the approach of the caravan boss.
"She'll be rebuilt to all her glory," the man said, drawing them from their personal contemplations. "Not to doubt the resilience of the folk of the Sword Coast. We'll make Neverwinter what she once was, and more. What do you say, lads and lasses?" he called, turning so all could hear. "Do you think we might convince the leaders of Neverwinter to name a bridge or some other new structure in honor of Drizzt D'Urden? Or Bonnego Battleaxe?"
"Oh, the Adbar Battleaxes, and don't ye never forget it,"
Brunner shouted as cheers rose up.
"This caravan isn't leaving Neverwinter until the spring at least," the boss informed the duo. "I'd be glad to have you along for that journey to Waterdeep."
"If we're about," Drizzt started to reply.
"But we won't be," Brunner cut in. "We got roads of our own to walk."
"I understand," the boss said. "The offer stands at twice the pay."
"It's possible," Drizzt said with a wry grin aimed at Brunner. "My friend here has a fondness for maps, one that oft empties our purses." Brunner's responding look was not in jest. The dwarf upset with Drizzt for giving away so much information.
"Maps?" the boss asked. "We'll be redrawing the map of Neverwinter soon, to be sure, with such fine craftsmen and brave warriors who have come to rebuild and defend her. We'll be battling the darkness, do not doubt, and in a way that will make all of Faerûn look to Neverwinter with hope."
Cheers again erupted all around them.
"The city is always recruiting new guards and scouts," the boss said, another offer.
Drizzt smiled, but wisely deferred to Brunner, who repeated,
"We got roads of our own to walk."
"As you will," the boss replied with a bow. "Though every road in these parts seems filled with danger now."
He shook his head and looked back in the general direction of their last fight.
"What were those things?"
"What did they look like?" Drizzt replied.
"Like children buried under the ash of the rolling mountain."
"Not children," Brunner explained. "Burned and shriveled by the hot ash. We're fighting them that once lived in Neverwinter, and ye might be wise to take care to keep your new buildings off any old spots that would have been filled with folk, if ye catch me meaning."
"And they rise again from their natural tombs?"
the boss said with a shake of his head.
"Did the catastrophe carry such magic in its hot flow?"
Drizzt and Brunner just shrugged, for no one had an answer yet about the recent turn of events, where undead monsters walked forth in such large numbers.
"Just zombies," said Brunner,
against the dispirited look on the face of the boss.
"Quicker, more agile, more fierce," the drow added.
"They've been seen all about Neverwinter Wood,"
a driver on the next wagon informed them. Drizzt nodded.
"So many killed in the cataclysm," he lamented. "A feast for necromancers and carrion birds alike." "Consider my offer," the boss said, turning to leave. "Both of them."
When the caravan started moving again, Drizzt looked at Brunner.
"Our own roads, elf," the dwarf remarked.
Drizzt just smiled and let it go at that. They arrived in Neverwinter soon after, to cheers and greetings from all in the camp, and even Drizzt's dark skin and drow heritage did little to quell the enthusiasm toward the newcomers. The wagons were stripped in short order, craftsmen and merchants of all types rushing up to fill their orders, then bustling back to work.
The sound of hammers and saws filled the air, men and women rushing to and fro with purpose and good spirits. It reminded Drizzt and Brunner of Icewind Dale, of their earlier days, so full of hope, so full of purpose, so full of determination. Brunner knew his current quest didn't quite live up to that, by the drow's estimation. He didn't doubt that Drizzt would recommend that they remain in Neverwinter through the winter, that they should scout and fight for those good folk who were indeed battling the darkness to rebuild a city. But Drizzt let it go, and as the pair departed the town early the next morning, they both took care to not even look back. They traveled north along the road, thinking to stop in at Port Last and strike out into the crags again from there. When they sat at their midday meal, the conversation was one-sided. Brunner could hear himself babbling on about his newest acquisition and where they might meet up with some of the landmarks mentioned on the map. Hardly listening in the first place, Drizzt appeared distracted by his water bottle, which the dwarf could see shivering, so much so that it seemed to be crawling across the ground as if something alive was trapped within it.
"A water sprite?"
the dwarf asked after a moment, but even as he spoke the words, the ground beneath them began to shake. Both dropped low to secure themselves as the momentum of the quake grew, the ground jostling violently. It passed quickly.
"Might be that they're not so smart in putting Neverwinter back where it was," Brunner remarked. "Them quakes are starting again."
Indeed. After a decade of quiet, the last few months had brought several heavy tremors, as if some malevolent force was stirring once more. Brunner looked to the east, toward where the twin-peaked mountain had once stood, but only a single peak remained. It seemed to him that the mountain stood a bit larger than he remembered, as if it was some dwarf warrior puffing out his chest. He shook his head, thinking it to be his imagination, so soon after the recent tremor. Drizzt had traveled to that mountain soon after the destruction of Neverwinter, seeking some clue as to what had happened, but had found nothing beyond the cooling crater of Mount Hottenough. Brunner's observation was undeniable, though. The quakes were beginning again, though the ground had been silent soon after the eruption for 10 years. The dwarf glanced back the way they'd come, back to the fledgling city of Neverwinter. Perhaps it would be better if distant Waterdeep remained as the vanguard of the north, he thought. But only briefly, for as he considered the determined looks on the faces of those he'd seen rebuilding Neverwinter, the dwarf couldn't believe they were wasting their time, even if pursuing their purpose came at the price of their lives. There was no real communication between them, no hierarchy, king, or government. The ghosts of Gontalgrim had been trapped by the cataclysm that destroyed their ancient homeland in millennia past, events lost to the ages in Faerûn. But they did have purpose, to defend the halls against intruders. And they had regret. It had been a dwarf, a Delzoon dwarf and his companions, allowed passage by the defenders of the hall who had released the primordial. Confused and saddened by the destruction the primordial had wrought, the ghosts had nevertheless continued their quiet vigil. But the tremors had returned. The beast stirred once more. There was no conversation, no directive, but even those pale spirits knew they couldn't stop the coming storm, could not fulfill their purpose. It began with one defection, not so much a conscious thought as a desperate flight. Then, out of Gontalgrim went the spirits, drifting along the reaches of the Underdark, seeking aid. Others followed, and many left, walking forlornly from their ancestral home, seeking Delzoon blood, living allies who could entrap the beast once more. Following the tendrils of the host tower, some were drawn toward Luskan. Others found darker roads, descending to the deeper Underdark, endless corridors few living dwarves would dare to walk. They carried with them their sorrow for what once had been, their pain for what had recently been marred,
and their fears for what would yet come when the primordial awakened in all its mad rage.
Chapter 11. The War of Dark and Darker. Black smoke rose in serpentine spirals above the death-scorched ground. Like a river of death, a line of decay and necromantic magic reached out from the main hub of disaster across a field and into the pyroclast, seeking spirits that had been trapped within the shriveled corporeal husks and calling them forth to serve. Sylora Psalm watched this newest outreach with her typically sparkling eyes and satisfied grin. Though nearing 40, the years had not yet dulled the Thayan sorceress's beauty. Changed it, perhaps, making her a bit thicker about the waist, her skin a bit less smooth, and some small wrinkles had appeared around her eyes. But more than counterbalancing those unavoidable physical changes, there had come to the formidable woman even more inner substance and strength, more confidence, and an increased air of power. It showed in her eyes, and in her grin. Her dread ring was becoming a reality at long last, though the number of dead in the sparsely populated area of Neverwinter Wood, even before the cataclysm, had been deemed inadequate by several of Zaz-Tam's ambassadors, many of whom were Sylora's rivals. Zaz-Tam had trusted in Sylora's judgment, though, and she continued to have faith that she would deliver on that trust, that her dread ring would come to fruition, giving the Lich Lord the hold he had so long desired on the Sword Coast. The pyroclast began to stir, a shaking of the black volcanic stone. Some loose ash and dirt fell into growing cracks. A small gray hand appeared, withered and shriveled, its fingers twisted into a pose of perpetual agony. Slowly at first, but with increasing frenzy, the hand clawed and shoved at the rock. A pair of Ashmedai attendants started toward the spot to help the newest child of Zaz-Tam break free from its decades-old tomb. But Sylora held them back with an upraised hand. She smiled widely, even giggled, as the zombie pushed aside enough of the debris to poke forth its other arm, then, prying the two limbs apart, shoved its head from its pyroclastic womb. Its scrabbling movements grew increasingly frenetic, the creature demanding to come free, desperate to hunt the living, but only those living, of course, who were not attuned to his omnipotence, Zaz-Tam. Standing beside Sylora, Dahlia was far less imposing than she had been a decade before, though she looked exactly the same, her elf heritage protecting her from the ravages of a mere decade. She wore her traveling garb, the high black boots, the red-banded black hat, the white blouse under the black leather vest, the black skirt that climbed diagonally nearly to her hip, and the 9 diamond studs in her left ear and 1 in her right. She had been ordered not to remove them or to change the pattern, a reminder to Corvindor Cray that Sylora's intervention had been to his benefit. And, of course, she still commanded Kozah's Needle. But as there seemed something more formidable about Sylora, more solid and confident, so Dahlia appeared diminished. She didn't smile as she watched the birth of their newest minion. She hardly ever smiled anymore. "Take heart, young one," Sylora said to her, more of a tease than a gesture of goodwill. "See what we have done." The obedient Dahlia nodded and wondered, not for the first time, how it had happened, how she'd fallen so far. Obviously, her descent in the ranks of Zaz-Tam's hierarchy had been facilitated by those long-ago pangs of conscience, her failure to finish the deed and begin that which she had promised. It hadn't helped her, of course, that Sylora Psalm had been the one to rescue her mission. That Dahlia had ever been allowed to live after being captured in Luskan had surprised her, and still, she wasn't sure if the mercy had been because of her work in locating the primordial, or simply so that Sylora could subjugate her and keep her in thrall. Many were the days when Dahlia wished they'd killed her. Beyond her predictable descent in the hierarchy, though, it was the other fall that had troubled Dahlia even more. The loss of swagger, of lust, of the devil-may-care attitude that had guided her life for so very long. "I have spoken with Zaz Tam about you," Sylora remarked as she sent the zombie on its way, out into the forest to hunt Shadowvar. She turned a wry grin on Dahlia. "He is pleased by your willingness to submit to my will." Dahlia tried hard to keep the hatefulness out of her blue eyes, but not hard enough, she knew from Sylora's widening smile. Of course Sylora would bring it to that. She had taken such pleasure in putting Dahlia in her place, day by day and year by year. She had never once extracted any physical punishment on Dahlia, as Sylora often did with the Ashmedai. No, her abuse of Dahlia had been strictly emotional. One game of mental cat and mouse after another, and with every remark holding a double meaning. "Our beast is awakening once more," Sylora went on. "It will rain greater death and destruction this time, feeding the dread ring, securing our hold here. Even without that, the agents of Shade Enclave are retreating." "They're still about," Dahlia dared say. "But not in Neverwinter Town in any numbers," said Sylora. "Their grip on that city was undisputed before I awakened the beast, was it not?" Her tone with that last question made it quite clear to Dahlia that she was actually seeking an answer. "Yes, milady," the elf warrior dutifully responded. "Now they remain only because they seek some ancient elven relics in Neverwinter Wood. But what they find day after day are my minions, risen from the ash and eager to kill." She paused and looked across the small field to a group of Ashmedai standing beside a trio of different zombies, not ash-colored but darker-hued. Two of the three carried garish wounds, as if their corpses had been fed upon, and indeed they had. "This is the genius of his omnipotence, is it not? Other armies diminish with death, but his grows with every fallen enemy." Dahlia's eyes fixed on the third of those corpses, one who had died from a single crushing blow to the side of his head. She had done that, defeating the man in single combat, and it had been a good kill against a worthy opponent. In times past, she would have savored that victory. But looking upon the corpse brought a bitter taste to her mouth. "Go to Neverwinter Town in the morning," Sylora instructed her. "I wish to know how many reside there now, and how many of the Netherese stalk her streets." Fists clenched at his sides, Herzgo Allegni looked down upon the town of Neverwinter, focusing his gaze and his anger on that beautiful winged structure that centered the rebuilding. The Herzgo Allegni Bridge, it had been called, for just a few days. For several years after that, like everything else in Neverwinter, it had been called nothing more than part of the disaster, for there had been no one around to take note of it. But its name was the Winged Wyvern Bridge once more. None of the new settlers had heard of that decade-old proclamation of Lord Hugo Babrus. Hugo Babrus, dead like everyone else who had been in or around the city of Neverwinter on that terrible day. Save those Shadowvar nobles like Allegni, who had shadow-walked back to Shade Enclave. And one other, the man who stood beside Allegni even then, and who had informed him, with a bit too much glee in his voice, Allegni thought, of the reversion of the bridge's name.
"You are certain of this?" Allegni asked.
"It was one of the tasks you put upon me to prepare for your arrival," answered Barabbas the Grey. "When have I ever failed you?" The sarcastic response had the tiefling turning hateful eyes at his subordinate. "We will not be welcomed in there," Barabbas went on.
"Then perhaps we should not ask their permission before entering," Allegni said with a sneer, and turned back to the distant town and the bridge he had so coveted. Barabbas didn't even wait until the tiefling had turned before offering a shrug in response.
but he did add to it. These are not enemies to be dismissed too easily. These men and women we will face in Neverwinter. Nor are they any friends of the necromancers who pull forth undead from the ruins. These are seasoned fighters and spellcasters who have stubbornly